This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting to all four corners of the globe, to all the ships at sea, to fans worldwide, huddled over their personal listening device, wanting to know all that is happening in Phil World, and we're here to bring it to you as we do here on the podcast. How you doing out there, folks? Phil Pritchett here from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, bringing you the news from the front. And oh, what news we have to bring. Things always just rolling here at Trinidad. It's always a little slow in the summer. People leave town, stuff. There's all this, hey, man, I'm going on vacation. I'm out of school. Give me a few minutes on that, Phil. We're still deciding things and what we're going to do, you know, for festivals or recording projects, etc. But stuff definitely starting to fall into line. So thanks for hanging in there and booking us. Man, we're going to be playing Western Days in Louisville. Louisville, Texas, right up here. Thanks to our friend Jerry Thompson bringing us in there. Louisville, Texas, man, that's going to be at the end of September. So look forward to that. Man, it's looking like we might be back at Poor David's Pub. Did you hear what I just said? Poor David's Pub, also in September. Playing a show there with the full band and our friend Jason Bales, another Texas songwriter there. So we're going to do a little double bill kind of reunion Dallas Poor David's Pritchett deal. So we're looking forward to that, man. That's a couple things on the calendar. Gosh, what else, man? Had a couple of records come in here. This guy, Peter Wagner, man, I can't wait for y'all to hear this guy's stuff. Peter Wagner, I get, he's from Coleman, Texas, down there in Coleman. An Austin guy, kind of a rock guy, but he wanted to use kind of country accoutrements, should I say, on his music. But man, he had these real spacey acoustic guitar demos with this wonderful voice, just with this aching, longing vocal, man, like Peter Gabriel, the stuff I love so much. Kind of like that, and real bizarre stuff. But he came in here. We got Roger Ray, the great pedal steel player and podcast contributor from Jason Boland and the Stragglers. So Roger Ray was on steel. We brought in Scott Boland to play keys, Hammond organ. So Scott was in there, set up right next to Roger. Peter was showing us the songs. And the great Pete Coatney, the podcast's own Pete Coatney, was in there playing drums. So, man, it's just a family affair. And yours truly, Phil, was on bass. The bass guy didn't show up. So what are you going to do? Phil's going to strap on a bass and make it happen, man. That's how we do it at Trinidad. Everybody's like, man, do you got enough guys? You got enough players, Phil? I got songs. Do you got a drummer? We put the call out. we got so many local great musicians here that come out of the woodwork to play on people's stuff. It's great. And then, you know, I play on it, but I kind of wait and see where the need arises, where someone doesn't show up. Man, we don't have our lead player. We don't have an acoustic guy. We don't have a drummer, keyboard, bass. I just say, hey, man, you can do worse than me. Let me give it a shot. And I love doing that, man, just picking up, playing songs I don't even know. And that's how we did it. It was just a blast. So thanks to Peter Wagner and our friend Rio Lemon for putting that all together. I'll let you know how that turns out as soon as it does. Well, what's in the news, man? Are you like me? Do you have Olympic fever? Man, I have gotten so into the Olympics. Some people claim that's not a good thing for a man like me to say. But I'm telling you, man, I got the kids in the house. You know, there's nothing on TV that me and all the kids, and, you know, I told you we watch American Idol sometimes and stupid stuff like that. But it's fun to sit with the kids and talk about what's going on. It's a good family entertainment. I used to watch TV with my parents growing up. That's all we watched. All we did in the evenings, watch whatever was on. And talk about it, and we watch the Oscars and things like that. But it's gotten tougher these days with so many channels and so much unsuitable stuff on TV. And you know, the kids read a book or they go watch their shows in another room or something like that. So it's fun to have the Olympics, something everybody can rally around and watch the swimming and things like that. So I've been loving watching the Olympics, man. I'm very, very impressed with our USA team. Very proud. I noticed particularly the female track stars. Always, when they're being interviewed, they always make a point to say, hey, I'm here to represent my country. I'm very proud. Hope I'm making my country proud. And, man, I think that's just so great. I feel like some of the athletes are so – I know they're not I don't know. They just talk about themselves a lot. I feel like the swimmers are a little bit like that. You know, they run a great race. What happened? Well, you know, I've been training real hard. You know, I got off good on the wall, and, you know, I was just thinking what my coach was saying, so had a good lap, and I worked out pretty good. Yeah. You know, that's just kind of what they say. They never go, man, I swim for the United States. Just happy to be here representing my country. They don't say that a lot. So it was nice to hear a lot of those track folks talk about, you know, their pride in representing the good old USA, man. So that was that did my heart proud. Oh, man, what else? Are you following this Tom Petty thing? Oh, man, I got the biggest kick out of this. This looks like something I would have tried to pull in, like, college. If you hadn't seen the story, man, some big executive at Amazon is going to hire Tom Petty to play at his wedding because he and his future wife, met at a Petty show. He just goes, man, I'm going to get Petty to play my my wedding. And so he goes online and he comes across some booking Tom Petty website some dude has up. He's got a picture of Petty. Looks official, I guess. So he starts exchanging emails with this guy. I didn't read the story real carefully. I just got the overall sense of it. And sure enough, dude, this guy gives him the golden words. Well, hey, man, just send the deposit and we're all set to go. Of course, this guy says Petty will do it for $330,000. So this guy sends in half the money and, you know, never hears from the guy again. So with a few weeks out from the wedding, the Amazon guy is suspicious. They somehow track the guy down and I think he got all his money back. And then to put the whole, nice little bow on the whole package, Petty does end up, playing the guy's wedding. Of course, everyone's like, oh, isn't that nice of Petty, man? That's so cool of him to do that because that guy got really screwed. I'm like, nice of Petty, man. Petty saw this story. He saw the guy I was willing to cough up $330,000 for an hour set. I mean, who's not going to show up for that? And Petty probably charged him a lot more than that. Petty probably said, hey, man, I hear you're looking for me for a gig. Guy's like, well, the fake guy was $330,000. Just, well, I wish we could do that, sir. But, yeah, how about $1.3 million or so? I'm guessing here. It had to be close to $1 million, though, wouldn't it? For Tom Petty? Surely it would. But then you're like, well, he doesn't need the money. Hey! Everyone needs the money, man, especially the rich rock star guys. What with their houses and divorces and drug habits, man, you know, kids scattered throughout the world they got to pay for. Oh, man. So when you see, hey, I can guarantee you when someone's booking Phil Pritchett gigs under an assumed name online, hey, man, we paid this fake Phil Pritchett guy $10,000 to play our party. You know, I'm going to show up and play in the faker's stead. Out of the kindness of my heart, and say, hey, man, I can't do it for 10, but 20, I'll do it. Some executive somewhere. Who knows? Are you that guy? Don't settle for a fake. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. I'll get right back to you. That's how you keep the imposters out, man. all those fake Phil Pritchetts out there, reaping the rewards of pretending to be me. I wish it was so. Well, man, we have a special guest here. A couple people know that I don't do a lot of. I did so many radio shows and stuff when I was starting out, early aughts, late 90s. I always go on there, go to the gig, go to the radio station. I just got to where I just didn't do it. Maybe I'm lazy. Maybe it's hurting my career. I don't know. I don't care. But I have become a fan of The Ranch has a evening show with my old friend Shane Hollinger, great DJ. It's called The Sideshow. Man, he just plays all this really cool stuff from bands I've never heard of. Some that I have, of course, but kind of new stuff. Just, hey, man, this is some guy from Lubbock, or this is some guy from Oklahoma or Austin. And he plays a song. I'm like, man, that's really cool. And I'll end up, going online and checking him out. So Shane had me on his show, The Sideshow, a few weeks ago. And we had a great time catching up and talking both on and off the air. I played a few songs, and we had a great time. So I said, hey, man, come do the podcast here next week. So lo and behold, he is out there in the hallway, ready to come here and to talk about the business of radio, in this crazy Texas music world. And we're going to talk to our good friend Shane Hollinger from The Ranch's Sideshow next. Stay tuned. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Well, 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 who do we have here today? Coming into the studio here, Trinidad World Recording, sitting comfortably on the IKEA sofa here, provided by myself and all of you out here who support great music. The great Shane Hollinger is here.
For just a second, I thought you were going to introduce somebody else.
That's right.
You started with great, and then that was
That's
it.
That's right. I always like to put an astounded look on my guest's face.
Right.
You're looking over your shoulder, like who's getting ready
cool,
to come
somebody
in?
Cool's coming in.
Shane, of course, the afternoon, evening host on 95.9 The Ranch here in downtown Fort Worth, The Sideshow. So, do I have that right?
Yeah,
the
Sideshow. Where all the carnival freaks hang out.
The Sideshow. Of course, last week I stopped into the Sideshow. My debut on the Sideshow.
It was
live and in person.
You'll never forget your first time.
And we talked about the White Elephant Show, which was fantastic.
Good.
Thanks to the promotion on your show and other things. Played some songs. Got a feel for that ranch radio space down there. I haven't been in that studio in a long time.
It's pretty rancid in there now, isn't it?
Let's be honest. Tearing things up. Of course, everybody knows where the Ranch studio is. It's right there in the middle of Sundance Square. And y'all are moving. Now, I didn't realize you're moving into a new building, and then you're moving back into this building.
Yeah,
is that the plan?
Yeah, they tell us it'll be about 18 months. Sundance Square is going to completely gut the building.
Right.
And remodel it, build us two big showcase studios, they call them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I heard that y'all were moving, which was fine. I go, I'm sure it's an upgrade. But I was like, man, it's such a cool old building.
It really
is. I think it would be a shame. So it's cool that y'all are going to be back there.
Well, I'm interested to see what happens with all the ghost activity. You've heard about all that, right?
Of course.
Yeah,
Yeah.
If they'll be happy, excited, angry, I'm not really sure.
Well, that building's got to be, how old is that thing?
It's 1800s. Yeah, I mean, I don't know when in the 1800s, but it's old.
There's been some old gunfighters just shot and buried under the floorboards in the basement down
there.
There's
been
probably
a lot of careers in Texas music that have been shot and buried under the floorboards.
And they paid for the privilege heavily.
Yes, they did.
Well, Shane, I got to know Shane first. Stephenville was
I think
really
it was Stephenville, yeah.
Mostly. No, what was the station down there again? Remind me.
Oh, God, which one was it?
K something.
K something, which was my favorite one out of all the K's.
How long were y'all down there? I
was in Stephenville. Actually, Stephenville was the first gig I ever had when I started in radio when I was 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
I lied about my age, of course.
Okay.
And got the midnight to 6 a.m. shift and then would go to school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
You never slept at all.
Obviously, I was next to last in my graduating class because of that.
See, this is what true music people, this is how we live our lives, isn't it?
Missed a lot of school, had to have the special
Were you
exception.
In school down there, or high school?
In high school.
Oh, yeah.
In high school, yeah. No, I did college for about 2 weeks at junior college.
Yeah.
And said, nah.
No.
What's the point?
Can you go to college and learn radio, learn about great music? Of course not.
They have radio school, but, you know, I thought I was better than that. Lo and behold, I wasn't, but anyways.
So how long were you? So you started the Stephenville thing,
mm-hmm.
which we all heard about as cool bands.
Yeah.
People say, I mean, there's a station in Stephenville, man. It plays great stuff. I'll never forget leaving a show. I must have played at Bostock's, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
With the band, and we were rolling out, and you were on the air. You were on late, right?
I've been on late.
10 to midnight?
Probably.
I guess it must have been midnight coming off, and y'all just crank up Bob Dylan live. You know, the 75 Rolling Thunder review.
Mm-hmm.
Throw my ticket in the wind. You know, with T-Bone Burnett and Joan Baez. The Rolling Thunder review Dylan tour.
Yeah.
Tonight I'll be staying here with you. I was like, man, you don't hear this on the radio.
And every now and then
you
get that call. Well, this ain't Texas Country.
It's a bootleg.
Country.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah.
You get that.
But I remember thinking, man, this is something I can get behind here.
Mm-hmm. So and you did.
We'd come down and do the show before headed over to Bostock's or City Limits or wherever we were.
And we would bring tens and tens of people with us.
I know it.
It was big time. A lot of people listened to us back
but
then.
But, man, all those bands were going down there and doing your show, weren't they?
Yeah, it was neat to see that. I got to be a part of that when that Stephenville scene actually started, you know.
Yeah.
It was because when we first started radio down there, they were doing the Tracy Bird, you know,
yeah,
the Watermelon Crawl stuff was the big thing. And I think it was City Limits had Tracy Bird out there. It was the last big top 40 Nashville act they had, you know, and they paid at the time $15,000 or whatever it was, which was unheard of for Stephenville at the time. And about 40 people showed up.
Right.
And it was like, why are we doing this? And then, they find out that there's this cool music scene right here in the state of Texas.
Guys will show up for free and just rock the house and bring a big crowd.
Beer and barbecue.
That's right.
That's pretty much what you guys get paid now still, isn't it?
That's right. Pretty much, yeah. I'm still waiting for my $15,000 on one of these nights.
Yeah, exactly.
So hopefully it shows up. So you guys were doing that show. Did you run into the crowd of usual suspects coming down there?
Oh, yeah. You know, it was the introduction of Pat Green and Corey Morrow and Phil Pritchett and all
Max
these guys.
Stalling,
Max, big tall Max with a tiny hat, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming down to do the show. And then, next thing I know, as often happens, is I go down to a gig and it's not happening. It's gone.
Yeah.
What happened?
I went to, Kerrville.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to Kerrville for a few years down there and started a station called Revolution FM.
Yeah.
We did that. We did the whole Rev FM thing.
Uh-huh.
And, I had differences with management.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
Now, were you just kind of going down with your show, with your...
It was kind of like what, I guess, I hate to name names, but The Wolf does. You know, Top 40, uh-huh. mixing a little Texas music here and there.
Some certain shows that
yeah,
are,
they'd
are
have,
more
you know,
centered
a little,
on something
they'd
else.
They'd have a specialty show.
Yeah.
And I walked in the door, and they hired me to be the music director. And I walked in and said, okay, all the Nashville stuff's gone. We're going all Texas. It'll work. People just, you know, oh, my God, we can't do this.
Right, right.
I was doing the morning show, too, which was horrible for me.
In Kerrville?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a morning person.
No.
Yeah, you know, it's a 6 a.m.
6 a.m.,
I'd be there, you know, 5:59, sprinting to the studio before we head down
here.
Yikes. And, you know, and just start breaking out deep Nathan Hamilton cuts, you know, and stuff. People are like,
the market is huge for that.
What is this? You know, and
yeah.
the gourds and, you know, real bizarre off the wall stuff. And they loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. Had a few differences. So I left there and they've actually since turned that into a classic rock station, which seems to happen that or Tejano now. It seems like a lot.
Uh-huh.
But then we came back to Stephenville as my dad was opening up this radio station called Mandatory FM.
Right.
It was a different station and we changed it. I used to do this bit. James McMurtry's my favorite singer-songwriter.
Okay.
I used to do this bit on every show I was on called Mandatory McMurtry.
Yeah.
And so that's where Mandatory FM came from. It was going to be cool singer-songwriter stuff, and that's what we did. And
yeah.
We did that for a few years, and then got the offer from the ranch and came here.
Yeah.
And there's been some little mom-and-pop AM stations in between there.
Here and
non-coms.
There. What do you consider yourself?
Myself?
Well, you're in radio, but you're not in the, would you say maybe like the PD overseer role?
I'm an instigator.
You see yourself as a gatekeeper, a tastemaker, a guy that travels around with his hard drive of his own bands that he likes and are going to foist it upon the unsuspecting ears of the public.
That's kind of what, I don't know what it is about me. I can never conform. I've actually attempted to do the popular mainstreamish sounding
play
stuff.
Your Alan Jackson and shut your mouth and you
cannot
do it.
You know, I was doing at one station a classic country show. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Noon to three, the Classic Cafe.
Yeah.
And you know, and I started mixing in Robert Earl Keen and Billy Joe Shaver and Cherry Jeff Walker.
The hammer comes down.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know.
That's interesting though. There's not many like you're very rare in that. I mean, you know, I've traveled around as much as some of these other guys, and it is kind of that way. You're talking to a program director who is on a tight leash, who's just trying to, and he's responsible for kind of the content, and he's maybe a personality on the show, but he's not. And you're more like a guy in a band, you know. That you know.
You listen to this.
You're pushing your own agenda.
Yeah,
which is rare.
It's really rare, and you know, I got to take my hat off to Kevin McCoy for the ranch. You know, program director there. He took a chance on me. He knew what I was going to be like. You know, I wasn't going to be like everybody else up there.
Right.
And played my whole thing. And they've always been real cool with just letting me do what I do. You know, because they know that there's an audience for it.
Yeah. And it seems like now, we were talking about on the show last week, y'all have got, I guess just with, of course, you know, handheld devices and the ranch app and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's radio's future in that, people anywhere can listen kind of thing?
It really is. Yeah, with the app we have, it's really cool because I'll get people during my show that are, hey, I've got you plugged in. I'm listening to you driving around in California right now. Wow. I forget that's possible out there, you know?
Right.
And it makes it more of a worldwide. It's really cool because I've got guys overseas, you know, in the military that are listening to the show all the time because that's kind of their time off frame, you know?
Right.
You got to stay ahead in this business, man. If you're just going to be the old mom and pop radio station now, I think you're lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with the mom and pop, for radio for so long was just, you know, it was localized. It was just, you know, we play Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. Mm-hmm. We advertise the local hardware store, the local truck dealership. And that's how. And then as you got, you know, the Clear Channels and the conglomerates, I guess it got more bland, you know, more a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
Yeah, very watered down.
But now it seems like there is, you know, to have an impact on any level, you do have to – you got to find that niche.
You really
like
do.
You're doing. You can't just say, hey, I'm on the air in DFW. We're just going to play the top country hits because you can get that anywhere
in the
country. So
throw a rock.
The only way you're going to get a guy in Maine who used to go to Texas Tech, who's up there, and man, the music sucks up here, he'll have that app and say, man, I always listen to this dude's show. He's always got a great playlist. And I guess those are people you hear from time and again.
You hear a lot of that. It's you know, it reminds them of home, or it's the shows they used to see when they came down here and went to college.
And the
know?
Military guys you mentioned. Yeah, a lot of that. We get a lot of emails and Facebook notices from guys overseas who are listening. Probably to us on your show from time to time.
From time to time, probably.
From time to time, yeah. It's also cool you publish your playlist like every day or just once a week. You throw out what you've been doing.
When I'm in studio, there's a couple of nights a week where I'm out of the studio and it's hard for me to keep up with what I'm playing because what happens is when I get into the studio, they already have songs that are listed out for me.
Yeah.
And I'll have a song. I wish I would have brought my notepad just to show you.
Yeah.
Of just everything that I feel like I'm going to play that night.
Right.
And I go in and start taking stuff out and changing music out. And it's like that. When I'm out on location, I have a guy back in the studio pushing the buttons for me.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, what's coming up this hour? And he starts telling me, I'm like, take that out and put this in. Take that out and put this in.
Move this around,
you know. And but it's hard for me to keep up. But when I am in studio, I like to keep that, you know, that list rolling, because I always like to introduce you to, you know, usually a third of my show is stuff that you've never heard before in your life. And that's my goal. And my goal is for you to want to go, wow, that was cool. Who was that?
Mm-hmm.
You can't hardly get a hold of me. So you can go look at that playlist, kind of remember where it was, and you go check that band out.
You know?
And then you're going to find a whole lot of new stuff.
How do you find new stuff? What's I mean, I know there's a lot of different ways, but is there a place you go?
There's not really.
Yeah.
There's not really. I mean, I get a lot of stuff sent to me, obviously.
Right.
I get a lot of, you know, I'll see from, I follow a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff, and to kind of find out who they're playing with, you know.
Yeah, right,
I always like to find out who the opening band is at any show.
Right.
Because that's the next band.
You see some guy, doing a lot of dates with the Gourds or something, you might kind of go, man, I need to pay attention to
who's
these guys.
That band?
Yeah, I keep seeing their name pop up on Hayes Carl bills or something. You're kind of like, okay, I need to pay attention to who this guy is.
I pay a lot of attention to the songwriters,
because
a lot of the songwriters are the bands I end up playing.
Right,
you know,
right.
Off of some album, you know, Wade Bowen's got a new album out.
Right.
This guy wrote a song with him, so I'll go check that out, you know.
Right, right.
It's important for me because it's an addiction, Phil, is basically what it is.
Hey, you're turning your passion and your addiction into a job. That's what we've all done, basically.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Well, man, what do you see, backtrack here, and listeners of this show will know what I'm talking about. 1996, Phil makes a CD called Phil World, featuring Maria, Skywalker, and other soon-to-be Pritchett classics that we still play every night. But back then, there was me, and now you had Jerry Jeff, you had Joe Ely. Major label Texas guys, but they were on MCA or something. But I made a CD, just as Jack Ingram had. And here we were. We did not have a deal, but yet we had a CD, which enabled us to get on jukeboxes in Nacogdoches and Lubbock and Austin and wherever else. And I took it to Waterloo, and they said, well, you're not really a country guy on a major label, and you're not, it's not a cassette tape like these other bands had. You have a CD. I was on a little cardboard stand, and there was, I remember it was me and Jack Ingram, and maybe Keen, and maybe like maybe Owen Temple had his first album out. And there was about four of us, maybe. And I was like, okay, you know, here's the thing. Here's what you do. And, you know, about 5 years later, there was a million CDs out there. Blockbuster had a Texas music section. You know, big as a football field, you know, and everybody was on the cover with their shotgun and their dog, a song about beer and floating the river, and the scene was born.
And then it won't stop.
And it hasn't. And here was my question. Kevin McCoy and I talked at lunch. Back then, though, I at least could blame the delusion. I at least could say, I'm starting to make music because if I do it well, I can get a record deal, I can get songs cut, I can do this and this and this, and achieve international fame. I mean, not that I was doing it for the fame or money, you know, you love it, but there's some model to follow. There's some path. Path in the woods. And that happens kind of today, but not really. So my question is, and I have some young bands come in here, what is the end game? Why do these guys even get interested in playing? Of course, they love the music and all that, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, and they're chasing chicks.
Fine. But after that, they're not watching. There's no MTV. There's no some other band that just got a 7-record deal from Columbia. There's not, are they just thinking, well, maybe we can have a lot of downloads and Facebook followers and get a few people to some gigs? Is that the career? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
That's a good question.
I don't know, but to be perfectly honest, I don't know how far I'd have pushed it if that was all I thought I'd get out of it was just, you know,
some likes on Facebook.
Well, I don't know. There's no, I mean, you can have some viral video now. Just maybe this video, it's viral, it's blowing up, everybody's watching it. But there's no money at the end of that.
No.
And when you start having kids, and this doesn't matter, of course, when you're single and you're just out there crashing on people's couches, that's great. When you start getting a little older and you're like, man, I gotta have a show, or I gotta have a gig, or how do we turn this into a livelihood? that seems to be difficult. There seems to be a lot of bands that get a lot of radio play, mm-hmm. that are good, that are constantly on their Facebook and Twitter and play shows and open up and do all the right things. And you're just like, man, they're getting $400 and playing here and there. I don't know. I mean,
it's $500 in gas to get
you
there.
You mentioned yeah. McMurtry. I mean, he's a real success story. But you kind of take a step back. Well, what's he doing? You're kind of like, man, he's kind of a journeyman. You know, he's out there just banging around in a van. He, you know, on a good night, he'll have a few hundred to say, mm-hmm. you know. But there's no business plan for him to hop on that says, how do we get from the Granada Theater to the Cotton Bowl? I'm just like, I don't know. It just is what it is. It's just you play the Granada.
I remember
the rest of your life. Is that it?
One of my favorite times when I interviewed McMurtry, I'm sitting there talking to him. We were doing a little phone interview.
Okay.
And
A cell phone? That's surprising.
Yeah. I hear all this going on, this racket going on in the background. I'm like, what is happening? I'm not really sure what's going on. Yeah. I was like, James, where are you? He's like, well, I'm in the laundromat. I'm like,
cleaning some shirts.
Wait a minute. My favorite songwriter, and you have to go to a laundromat. And of course, his response is, I think you need to change your standards, boy. You know, I mean,
yeah, this is
even
it.
A guy that I idolize
sure.
as a songwriter. CNN just named yeah. the fiercest songwriter in America.
Stephen King's favorite
exactly.
Songwriter, yeah.
Has to go to a laundromat. He can't afford his own washer and dryer.
Well, yeah, he certainly makes a living. Mm-hmm. I think he'd maybe not admit to making a good living. I mean, if you just put how many dates he plays and, you know, the type of
yeah.
number. I mean, he's pretty low overhead. I mean, he's got two guys in the band.
But yeah, he's playing midnight at the Continental Club on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, you know? And I just wonder about that because there's no doubt that, you know, Jack Ingram didn't get going to just play, Poor David's Pub, the rest of it. You know, mm-hmm. he had, you know, hey, I'm going to be the next George Strait. That kind of thing was at least
yeah.
out there. And it just seems like since 2000, since Napster, since the dawn of the ubiquity of the internet, you just have, you know, you can play locally, like all those Lubbock bands we talked about, you know, that sell out the blue light, like our buddy Red Shahan mm-hmm. and Brandon Adams. Those guys.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They have great songs. They pack the blue light. But, you know, they want to play in Austin and they want to play in Dallas. And I'm just kind of like, dude, Dallas has – they've already got their own guys.
They're seen.
Mm-hmm. They don't need to – Dallas does not need to import guys from Lubbock or vice versa
right.
to have an active music scene. Whereas when I lived in Austin – when I went to Lubbock, it was a little bit like, you know, back in the 90s, it'd be like, hey, you know, Phil's from Austin.
He's got a CD.
He's got some CDs, yeah. you know. So we're all going to go see him or whoever. I mean, mm-hmm. now it's just kind of, I don't know, man.
Oh, so, there's a band playing tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And what astounds me listening to your show, listening to the sideshow on the ranch, Evenings on the Ranch, is how much – everyone talks about how music sucks these days – is how much great music there is out there.
That's,
it's overwhelming. I'm just like – I mean, every guy here that opens for us, I'm just like, dude, this guy is great. But the end game is so what? I hate to say that. I enjoy it, of course.
I guess the end game for most of these guys is – and you hate to say it, but you got to sell your soul, man. You got to get that song cut.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it ends up being. It seems like everybody that's been successful has had that song cut by so-and-so, and now they can do whatever they want.
Right, right.
You know, that's what – I don't know what it is.
Well, it's not – maybe it's not selling your soul as much as –
well, that's what the average fan's going to say.
Well, yeah, right, yeah. right, right. But, you know, a lot of it's luck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to – you know, I get tired of people saying, well, man – or somebody who's real successful say, man, I paid my dues. I slept in the van and blah, blah, blah. I just roll my eyes. I'm like, dude, everyone's doing that.
Yeah.
That's a given. That's just to even be able to say, yeah, man, I'm a musician. That's your whole life of killing yourself. That's it. And then mm-hmm. the difference between the guys, and we're all mailing stuff to Frank Liddell or whoever in mm-hmm. Nashville. Here's my new album.
Come on, Frank.
Whatever. I mean, that's what everyone's doing. Well, you know, hey, guess what? You know, Tim McGraw heard your song, Bruce Robinson, and he get his cell phone rings, mm-hmm. and here he goes. And Bruce can say, and rightly so, I stuck with it. I went to Nashville. I went around. I slept in the car. He can say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real and tough answer for guys like myself is, you have to do that, and then how do you make it? I'm like, well, then you have to get lucky.
Yeah.
You still have to get lucky to make you know, we're going to put some kids through college.
Right place,
money.
Right time all the time. Ask Bingham. Same thing.
There you go. He's a good example.
A lot of people don't know the whole story. Right. Yeah, these guys were all broke in Texas, and they said we can be broken.
Open it for Pritchett at Woody's. I mean, come on.
We can be broke in California. We can be broke in New York. Let's flip a coin and see what happens.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's
the right,
right
guys in the crowd at some little show they got in California.
Hey, this guy's kind of cool. That's
took
right.
Off.
Yeah. And he deserves all the credit in the world for going out there and for everything. But you know, I lived in Nashville for a year. I mean, mm-hmm. guys have lived different places, and we've all banged around, and it is. There's no formula for it, you know.
I wish there was. We'd make $1 million selling. The
I know,
formula.
Man. Out of a bottle.
Yeah.
Well, the great Shane Hollinger is here, chatting with us about his life in radio, his spot over there, 95.9, the ranch in Sundance Square, doing the sideshow. What are the hours of the sideshow every day?
7 to 11 p.m.
7 to 11 p.m. And, man, I get people emailing me all the time. I always know what's going on because I get texts. I heard you on the radio.
Oh,
and
cool.
I know it's during your show. I'm like, oh, that's Shane playing me.
Yeah,
throwing
him in my pocket.
There.
Don't worry about it.
Well, we hope Shane can drop by next week, man. Talk a little more about music today, the stuff he deals with. I love all the business aspect of it. And we thank him for coming by today. Thank you, Shane.
Buddy. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week on the P2 Podcast. Book the full band for crying out loud. Phil at philpritchett.com. Tell us about your festival, your party, your... gosh, whatever. If you want me to show up with a guitar and play in the living room, we do it, man. Or show up with the full band and play on a flatbed at the ranch. You name it. We love it. We do it all the time. Or come here and record at the studio. I'll produce your record. Play all the instruments, whatever you need. 817-733-5256. My thanks to Shane Hollinger. And thanks to all of you for listening to the P2 Podcast. We'll see you next week, folks. Much tougher.